Hi everyone, I'm Gary Nall. Today, a study from Yale University to improve students' mental health, teach them to breathe. Okay, this was published in Frontiers in Psychiatry, a good journal. So I'll go through that and a lot of other studies on how to live a longer and healthier life, and some new reports coming up in some peer-reviewed literature shows that what you've been doing all along, depending upon how long you've listened to this program, you've been on the right side of this issue, which means that you're going to live a longer and healthier life. For those of you who have listened but not applied, when's the right time to start getting healthy? That we'll discuss also. Also today, I'm going to share my own particular thoughts by pulling together several concepts that I've seen over my entire career, and how we seem as a society to be disconnected from the significance of these events, where whole industries are captured, institutions are fully captured, so they no longer represent a power to us, we the people, but instead are serving the special interest groups. So after I give my thoughts on that, I'm then going to play you a couple of clips. One clip is from a group of physicians, none of them alternative doctors. These are just mainstream, orthodox, board-certified physicians, but they have something in common. They're risking their careers, their livelihoods, by telling you the truth about the drug that has been curing people who are given it early for COVID-19, and yet it's being condemned by the entirety of the media and by a lot of people within Congress. Why? And what does that tell you about how they've been captured? Then from that, we're going to go to a special report with Professor Brett Weinstein and Matt Taibbi, and they're going to have a conversation. And what's interesting about their conversation, which I'm going to play about this next Tuesday, 55 minutes of it, is never once did they tell you specifically what they're discussing, but anyone in this audience who's been listening to me for a while will know what they're discussing, but I'll tell you just before this why it's so important what they're saying. And I really commend Brett and Matt for having the courage, because what they're saying are career-ending statements. And they could, just like with Joe Rogan, they could stop his program in a heartbeat, because he streamed to a large audience, people like him, on YouTube. And YouTube is owned by Google. So now we're seeing the big censorship. And you know, when they started this, they started quite some time ago, but nobody paid attention. And the most powerful ally that the deep state and all of the controlling interests have is one that never gets challenged, Wikipedia. It does more damage to more careers than any other source of information sharing in the world. So we are fighting back. Now, mind you, we do not have the money or the resources or the teams of lawyers in the Silicon Valley, best buddies who can pony up any kind of money, but we have truth. They don't. So I'm going to challenge them also, but we're going to go through a lot of organizations over a timeline so you can then have a better understanding why we're at the end of the game. Interesting, because I have a documentary. Just today it was announced that it's official final selection for the Albuquerque International Film Festival. I think this is the 28th film festival since January has been officially accepted or won. And the title of the film is Last Call for Tomorrow. And what I was going to title at first is There Is No Tomorrow, because the reality is there is no tomorrow. I mean, we're out of time. And only when you see this will you fully appreciate how bad it is. But I want to leave some optimism, because not everything's going to collapse all at once. It'll take some time. But when it does collapse, it's going to really adversely affect large segments of the world's population, as it is right now. But because you're not one of those 200 million people living in parts of the world, like in Bolivia or in the Sudan, where you have no food, you can't grow anything, so you have to migrate, but there's no money, no open doors. There's nothing to do when you get to another place except be shunned, unfortunately, by people who don't want you there. And that's a tiny fraction. That's not even 5% of the people going to be migrating. And imagine what happens when we have 2 to 3 billion people migrating. And we're not talking about in the future. We're talking about in the next 5 to 7 to 8 years. That's how bad things are getting. But nobody paid attention. People were aware of it. People understood it. Some, like James Hansen, tried to raise alarms. There were a handful, probably about 100 to 200 people, who not only were the scientists in the field, but they tried to speak out, and every one of them was silenced. They were called alarmists. Now, they're considered moderate. But why didn't the other tens of thousands of scientists who also had the same access, why didn't they speak up? Because they were, ring every alarm bell in your life. Light that conscious light in your brain to be fully aware of what I'm going to share with you today. This may be one of the most important programs for information and inspiration that I've ever shared. But we begin, as always, with the latest on health and healing. This is from Yale University. So when college students learn specific techniques for managing stress and anxiety, their well-being improves across a range of measures and leads to better mental health. That's what the study showed. And the research team evaluated 3 classroom-based wellness training programs that incorporated breathing, emotional intelligence strategies, finding that 2 led to improvements in aspects of well-being. The most effective program led to improvements in 6 areas, including depression, improved social connectedness, increased. This is very important. But we think we breathe correctly. Most people don't. We don't combine mindfulness with breathing. Shyam Bhatnagar, a longtime friend of mine, has probably the best insights in the world. So if you ever Google Shyam and his work at the Shree Center, his tapes, his videos, they're the best of the best in the world. And it's about relaxing yourself and breathing slowly, diaphragmatically, opening up that diaphragm, letting as much oxygen in as possible, and then releasing it and being mindful of your breathing. What you're mindful of, you have some control over. What you take for granted, you don't. It's like once in a race, went out very fast, and I realized after 2 miles, this was a New York City Marathon, I'm having a conversation with a guy who is just so relaxed. And I'd seen him in the park. I didn't know him. You know, you know people by saying hi, for years. But here we had started the race together, and here we are at 2 miles, and he says, "How are you feeling, Gary?" I said, "I'm feeling great." He said, "What time did you want to do today?" And I suddenly looked at the clock, and it was 5 minutes and 20 seconds, and I said, "Whoa, I'm going too fast." And I realized that my breathing was not relaxed. It was up in my throat. For him, he was breathing right because he had trained to run that fast. I had not trained to run a marathon at a 5-10 mile. Yeah, for a couple of miles, I could do it, but not sustain it. And that meant everything was going to change, which it did. I think I did a 303 marathon instead of a 240. That was all breathing. It was just the breathing. So from then on, I was very conscious of my breathing in every race. And while others were burning around there, I was going out dead last and breathing slow and nice and even. So when I needed to pick the pace up, it was effortless. Where I'd have gone out breathing, I wouldn't have had any speed, strength, lactic acid build up, and pain in your legs. So breathing, and that's just one example of how breathing can impact your athletic performance. It could be as much as half of what causes an athletic event to go right or wrong for you. But in life, just being able to keep breathing calmly when someone's yelling at you, or someone's saying something negative or toxic, and just to relax and realize, hold your composure, Yelling and screaming at each other will resolve nothing. It increases your likelihood of a stroke. It raises your blood pressure. It raises your cortisol level. You're in a fight and flight mode. Bring it all down. Just bring it down. Do you remember, I'll bet some of you had your parents or grandparents tell you, okay, just stop being angry and count to 10, slowly. And you thought, I don't want to count to 10, I'm angry, I'm going to express myself. They were right. So just remember, whenever you get a little anxious or depressed, slow it down. Slow your breathing, relax your body, be at ease. And this Yale study shows, yeah, it works, and it's good for you. From Hubei University in China comes a meta-analysis, meaning they looked at many different studies for some corollaries. And they conclude that the efficacy of ginkgo, G-I-N-K-G-O, ginkgo, two syllables, will improve cognitive function and support you if you have Alzheimer's disease. Both of those are important. Now, generally, for just good mental health, because ginkgo is terrific for you and is great for increasing circulation of the brain, I would suggest 100 to 200 milligrams. But beyond that, if you have a condition, then it's for your therapist to decide what it should be. From Johns Hopkins University comes a study that higher BPA levels, that's your air pollutants, are linked to more asthma symptoms in children. And this morning I was mailing something off to my office, some tapes that I had found that I'm going to do a new, I'm finishing up a brand new documentary on children and how they've been pathologized and manipulated, but where now it's so pathologized that it's considered normal for a kid to take multiple medications. And that's just the physiological part of it. And then you have the behavioral part where psychiatry, in the hands of a good psychiatrist, one that works with talk therapy, humanistic principles of living, can very much benefit a person. But that's true of most psychology and psychotherapy. But in the hands of the current majority of psychiatrists is an extreme abuse against the person. It's a violation of their biochemistry and the principles of believing that a pharmaceutical drug can rebalance the brain chemistry and assuming that the brain is imbalanced because they have depression or anxiety. Ah, you've got bipolar, you've got a brain chemical imbalance, you've got depression, brain chemical imbalance. None of that is true. Now imagine an entire profession being captured by a pharmaceutical industry, and so it's normal to say you've got a brain chemical imbalance, yet no ad ever on television, watch them the next time, when they're giving the disclaimer, it's generally in a lighter color so it's hard to read and it's distracting, will ever say that your depression or anxiety is specifically and scientifically proven to be done due to a brain chemical imbalance. It will never say that. And if there's an improvement in any drug, watch what else it says. In addition to a healthy diet, that drug. Well, how do you know? Was it the healthy diet or was it the drug? Did you do a double-blind study? Did you give one group of people just the drug and another group of people no drug but a healthy diet? And then what was the outcome? They've never done such a study. Because if they did, nobody would be buying psychiatric drugs. And I'm against all psychiatric drugs. I'm against all psychiatric treatment that is pharmacologically based because it is an abuse against the person. Yet we've sanctified it. And we shouldn't. Electroconvulsive therapy, lobotomies, all these are cruel and unusual punishments, but in the guise of we're helping the patient. No, you're not. You've never helped any of these patients. In fact, if any of you have been abused by the Psychiatric Society of Doctors, let us know, because I'm finishing up my new film, Manufacturing Madness, which has gone on for 8 years, to see where psychiatry was going and getting the records to prove that nothing in their diagnostic and statistical manual is legitimate, nothing in their treatment schedule is legitimate. And this is one of those industries that was captured, fully captured. And therefore, everything that happens after that is legitimated by the fact that, well, you were diagnosed with this, and therefore the court mandates you take that. It's all garbage science. So, when I was down delivering a parcel, I saw the man behind the desk had a mask, but he had an air tube going up to it with a little generator. I said, what's that doing? He said, it's putting fresh, clean air into my breathing passages, so I'm not breathing carbon dioxide and any pollution I might have into my body. I said, that's really neat. So I'm going to find out about it. He gave me the guy's name. That would make sense. So you're not breathing in toxic air, you're bringing in clean air, and that would certainly help people who have asthma, bronchial conditions, COPD. But remember, this is all based on BPA levels, the pollution around us. We've got to pay attention to pollution, because pollution makes a big difference. And by the way, BPA remains universal. You can get it in a lot of different ways, but it really hurts people with asthma and COPD and bronchial conditions and emphysema. This is published in the Journal of Allergy and Clinical Immunology. Next up is calcium and vitamin D nutrient deficiencies, which most people have a deficiency, lead to higher risks of osteoporosis, and most senior citizens have osteoporosis. The study finds that calcium and vitamin D is very common, and you need more of both to prevent osteoporosis. This was published in PLOS ONE, the scientific journal. Just a reminder, and by the way, you can also get vitamin D, D3, and calcium in different supplements. Take them separately or together, and take magnesium at the same time. Take the same amount of magnesium you do as calcium. Now, here's the most important study of the day. This is from the Eastern Virginia Medical School and the University of Rome, two different centers, published in the highly respected Frontiers in Immunology. What have we been saying? Yeah, build up your immune system. Help prevent the coronavirus. Build up your immune system so if you're older and you come into contact with the coronavirus, which is very easily spread, your immune system will be able to protect you, younger or older. Quote, vitamin C plus quercetin, a solid remedy for coronavirus. Two separate universities, two different reports, and they say the same thing. Brand new. So now we can say with scientific authenticity that vitamin C combined with quercetin, Q-U-E-R-C-E-T-I-N, represents a powerful natural remedy for the Wuhan coronavirus. That's according, not to me, that's according to Eastern Virginia Medical School and the University of Rome. And then the study goes into how the nutrients, especially quercetin, deals with pathogen virulence and the virus entry and virus replication and protein assembly, and how it interferes in all that. It inhibits the viral infection and proliferation, and when combined with vitamin C, quercetin is effective, quote, for both the prophylaxis, meaning prevention, and early treatment of the Wuhan coronavirus. So good news from qualified sources. You won't see a single thing in the mainstream media. It won't be advocated by the medical community because no one's going to profit from it, except you. So that's very important. Now we're 19 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, I'm going to share a few insights, and then we're going to go from those insights into a discussion between Matt Taibbi and also Professor Brett Weinstein. He and his wife were both tenured, and a group of students not from the university came on campus, protested him. They're ultra-liberal, by the way. Brett Weinstein and his wife, and a supporter of liberal causes. He was loved by everyone at the university, and his own students went out to demonstrate on his behalf, and they were shouted down, and I saw the video. It was just, you can imagine how vile and vulgar these students from another place were, but they managed to get the university to fire him, force him to resign. That's happening everywhere. So we'll be back, and then I'll share that with you, because this is going to I'm tying in multiple things today as a wake-up. Back in a moment. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I believe that there are times in life where we just have to stop everything for a short period of time. Might be an afternoon, an entire evening, no cell phones, no conversation, and just contemplate and ask yourself, stay in neutral, and say, what just happened? And if you're able to get that perspective, then suddenly, in that moment, you suddenly have a new perception of what just happened. Now I'm going to go through rapid succession of ways that we, the American people, over a period of the last 50 years, have had the institutions that we had historically believed were looking out for us captured by special interest. Let's start with the pesticide industry, and hence the Environmental Protection Agency. The woman who caused the entire environmental movement was Rachel Carson. It is on her shoulders that we all stand. She was a brave human being. She is one of the most important voices in American history because she was the first to open the door to show, as a marine biologist, how eggs from bald eagles were not hatching. They just had fluid membranes. And this was across the country due to DDT. A lot of us who were young, I was still in high school and idealistic, we began to look at this and look at an opportunity to help in whatever small way we could, writing articles or showing up to protests. And there'd be times when there'd be 3 to 6 of us protesting, and none of us were appreciated for our protest. I can remember very vividly some people saying as we were outside of a gate to a manufacturing plant what they thought of us. Be that as it may, we began to descend upon Washington, and then in came Ralph Nader and Nader's Raiders, Jim Garrison, and Dr. Sidney Wolfe and Michael Jacobson. These are very important people in the movement because they stayed. All the other Nader's Raiders came, spent a summer, and went back to their alma maters. He stayed. Thank goodness he did. He has been the most single important voice in the application of environmental change of any human being in American history. No legislator, no president has done what Ralph Nader has done. We managed in 1972 to get it passed. It was rough. Excuse me. I was up virtually all night counseling because I knew for the next 2 days I'm going to be writing on this topic. So I'm a little hoarse, sorry. In any case, when we came out of a building in Washington, D.C., after DDT had been banned, one of the people says, thank goodness, now we can go on to something else. And at that point, a person who was standing by me said, you do realize that there are 39 other equally toxic pesticides, and there's no one going to be left to fight them. You came, you won a battle, you'll lose the war. He was absolutely right. Aldrin, heptachlor, all these other chemicals that we've had to fight, some we've been successful, but for every one we get thrown out, they have tend to take his place. Look at the battle we've had for the last 15 years against glyphosate made by Monsanto. And we had no success at all until one person, a groundskeeper out in California, was found that his lymphoma and his health conditions and his cancer were due to glyphosate. And then now there's been, I think, 40, 50,000 people who've lined up in class action lawsuits, and they paid $10 billion more or less to settle those. Well, that doesn't mean that it's going to be banned. It's just that they paid an amount of money. We're still getting it. At the same time that we banned or got some attention paid on some of these, we paid no attention to neonicotinoids, which were destroying bee colonies. Before neonics, bees thrived, and one out of every three foods that we grow come from pollination from bees, like almonds or apples, oranges. And we haven't done a single thing about the neonicotinoids, not a thing. Why? Because the EPA was captured. It was captured clear back at Love Canal. Remember that? And where they tried to make it seem like, yes, there's chemicals in the ground here, and yes, there's a whole development of houses above it, but you can't prove that any of the, there's the tobacco industry. You can't prove a person's cancer, emphysema, heart disease, is due to the fact they smoked, and they got away with that for over 100 years, and upwards of 20 million people died from smoke-related illnesses during the period of time, until they finally lost, and they didn't lose because of science. They lost because they lied about its addictive capacity. And one of the people, an insider, went public with that with Mike Wallace on 60 Minutes. And then all the seven heads of the tobacco industry had to come on television and acknowledge they had lied. And then there were Medicaid, the state agencies that were paying for a lot of this, asked for hundreds of billions of dollars, which they could pay over a number of years. And so it never hurt their profits, to the contrary. Just like when, you know, Monsanto or Bayer that owns Monsanto, the stock will go up. Oh, that's behind you. You paid your fine. Or the tobacco industry. Oh, stocks are going to go up. It's behind you. Or Merck, when Merck killed more realistically 500,000 people, how much was actually presented at trial? Over 60,000 plus hundreds of thousands of strokes and heart attacks. None of those people were followed up. So how many of those people later succumbed to their heart attacks or stroke? They paid a fine, around $5 billion. They made $12 billion. They got to keep all their ill-gotten gains. The price of the stock went up. Everybody was happy. Nobody was shamed. Nobody was written off. Nobody was deplatformed. That's how an industry that is captured is controlled. You control the media. You control the financing. You control Wall Street. And then you take a look and you think, well, gee whiz, is that why when we were out there marching in front of the governor's office, the largest demonstration I was told by the police in the history of anyone demonstrating outside, you, this audience, thousands and thousands of you were there that day. In fact, the president of the, or the head, the executive director for Pacifica happened to have been in town. And that was our second demo of the day. Earlier, we had a demonstration against Indian Point nuclear power plants over at the Hudson River with Helen Collicott and Michio Kaku and all the others. And how did you put together the thousands of people? Yeah, because we're interested. But nothing's going to happen because the national agency, the Atomic Energy Commission, and others that control all this, and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, are stacked with pro-industry people. So they all concern and wring their hands and they'll have a committee, but nothing will change. And that's exactly what happened. In fact, the head of that commission would later quit because he wanted to make change. And he, in a private conversation, said they were stifling him. So they don't just take over something. They infiltrate it. They infiltrate it with their people. Who are their people? The oligarchs, the billionaires, the heads of major industries, the largest stockholders in all the major corporations. So they get their people from think tanks. These are generally people who are well-credentialed, have good degrees, and they are suddenly now the talking heads on every talk show. These are the people you're going to see interviewed repeatedly. And so they control. CIA is and the National Security Agency with Clapper were on television. And then James Comey interviewed all the time, very positively. Was any of what he's done wrong ever brought to? No. No, because they have an agenda. That's the key. Every one of these groups, every one of these people have an agenda. Sometimes it's power, sometimes it's profit, sometimes it's power and profit, sometimes it's ideology, sometimes it's politics. But they control everything. So you, the people, when you're told vaccines could be put to a test, a legitimate test, you're never seen that. You never get to see that test. Never get to see that test. No. Take a placebo, an inert saline solution, and you give it to 10,000 children. You give the MMR vaccine to 10,000 children, or the Gardasil to 10,000 children. You monitor them identically, same monitoring for the every 3 months for 2 years. Then you have a legitimate test. Why do you think they've never done that? Because they know the outcome. All you have to do is look in the toxicological peer-reviewed literature. Thousands of studies show that every single ingredient in every single vaccine is harmful at different degrees, and some is extremely harmful, especially neurologically, including aluminum and mercury, with solid polysorbate 80 and formaldehyde, etc. also. And they're all contaminated. There's no such thing as a clean vaccine. It doesn't exist. But they control the narrative. So their doctors who are getting money from the vaccine industries, they control that industry. So now they make it mandatory. So now what you thought was not important, what am I? You know, I'm 45 years old. You know, I'm healthy and, you know, I don't have any vaccines in my schedule. And suddenly your kid has to take a vaccine if you live in New York State or California or Maine or, let's see, there's five other states that were mandatory. I think Pennsylvania. You had to take it or you couldn't get your kid and all exemptions were eliminated. Total control. They have no liability. If every kid in America died tomorrow, you couldn't sue a single person because of it. That was built in. They worked on that. And all the people that were in Congress who worked on passing that Ronald Reagan bill, 1986 bill that identified him, they all went to work for the vaccine industry. The people at the FDA or the CDC, like Judy Gerberding, she oversaw the safety of vaccines, including the MMR, and then she went to work for the Merck, the maker of the MMR vaccine, for millions of dollars. So you see, every single institution in my life I've seen captured by special interest groups, and I'll give you an example of this. Now, please think of this. Please think deeply of what I'm going to tell you. The average person says, I'm not interested in all this nonsense. Just tell me how much vitamin C to take today. That, unfortunately, is 90% of my audience. You better look deeper than that, because here's what happens when you don't look deep. Go back to the mid-1980s. The FDA had been fully captured by the pharmaceutical industry, and they didn't like the idea that people would take vitamin C, vitamin D, and other things to prevent a cold. They wanted you to take their drugs, their over-the-counter medications. And so there was a movement, and I got word out of it real quick that it was coming, because I was on PFW in Washington, D.C., a Pacifica sister station, and I was there every day from 3 o'clock in the afternoon to 4. So whatever was happening, different agencies, people within those agencies would tell me. They were listeners. And the FDA started to mandate then to try to get a law passed that said that all vitamins were drugs, and therefore you couldn't take a vitamin unless you first had a prescription from your doctor showing you needed it, and then only at the lowest possible potency. You would have had to have a prescription. Well, let's just say the prescription costs you $30 to go to your doctor to get a prescription. They're not doing it for free. And then you have to go buy it. Well, you could no longer buy high potency. There would be no high potency nutrients of any kind. And at least 80% of all the nutrients that we now can go get, like ginkgo and ginseng, coenzyme Q10, you wouldn't be allowed to get any of those. So I got a call from a legislator. And he wanted to meet with me. Okay, I met with him. And he said, I'm going to share some information with you. And he shared some stuff with me. And he said, look, you're going to lose this battle because they're really smart. And this is all these pharmaceutical experts are in there and lobbying the FDA to tell them how to win over Congress. You've got to do something that influences the average person to influence a member of Congress. So I thought about it. And I saw that the people in the health movement were losing the battle because none of the people, Robert Atkins, none of these people were scholars, none of them. And they didn't do their homework. Robert Atkins and I were very close friends. We'd socialize all the time. He was the big protein meat. And that's fine. That was him and the millions who wanted that, the high-protein diet. And I was a vegan and without the same, you know, size audience he had for book sales. He was the number one author for years. And but on this, I said, Bob, you're on television, talk about this. Then we got word nobody wanted to talk about it, meaning no host wanted to talk about it. That means they had been told, don't talk about it. Now, I happen to know this for a fact because I was in Johnny Carson's producer's office, and he was on the phone, and he hangs up his darn, I ain't doing that. I said, what's that? He said, that was Ralph Nader's person, and they wanted Ralph on the show, and we got the word from upstairs, no. I can't tell him that, but that's what goes on. Now, I happen to have been there that day, happened to have had that conversation with the producer, and understand how it works. So I'm thinking, what can we do? I came up with this. I got on Maury Povich and some other shows in Washington, and I had debated the FDA commissioner. And here's the argument I used. I have in my hand here 1 pound of oranges. I have here an orange juice. I have here some carrots. Based upon your reading of what you believe we cannot do, we cannot associate any food that we consume, any beverage we drink, with any health condition. Therefore, we are no longer allowed in America to prevent any condition. My mother gave me a teaspoon that I didn't like the taste of it, cod liver oil, growing up, because she said it would help my immune system. All of us had that as kids. And when a person has a glass of orange juice, they're having because of the vitamin C. But now you, the FDA, want to say, don't you dare mention vitamin C in the common cold or vitamin C in health. And don't say that those carrots could help give you better vision, because that's making a medical claim. So do you want to arrest parents who want to have healthier children by preventing them from feeding them? Now, you're not going to care if they get fed hot dogs, hamburgers, french fries, Coca-Cola, and pizzas, because that's fine with you. But for a conscientious parent to want a healthy child or health for themselves, they have to stay silent. I said, I would expect this by the Stasi government in East Germany. Plus, you've now said that it's a drug. Okay, then are you going to ask everyone in America, every person that goes to shop, they must go to their doctor and get a prescription to buy 3 oranges, because you're saying that only 100 milligrams of vitamin C is a very high dose and it shouldn't go beyond that, otherwise it's a drug. Those 3 vitamin Cs right there have 115 milligrams. So it takes three oranges to make 1 glass of orange juice. So every glass of orange juice you're going to have to get a prescription for. Every time you have carrots, you're going to have to get a prescription? I said, that's where you're leading us. That's the kind of tyranny. And then I went across America to 55 cities. As a result, we stopped them. And no longer we enacted what was called the déchet, because I asked everyone everywhere I went, contact your legislator. Tell them that foods and supplements are not drugs. And you have a right to eat a healthy diet to stay healthy. And that's only fascism would allow otherwise. Never once did I mention the pharmaceutical industry. I could have. They were behind it. I'm going to keep it simple. But otherwise, the FDA has been captured. The USDA captured. All of the agencies, the CIA captured. The Justice Department captured. The FBI captured. The National Security Agency captured. The National Cancer Institute. I spoke with the director and said, why aren't you doing more on nutrients? You did great work when this opened. He said, because pharmaceutical companies, where the money comes from, captured. So all of our agencies have been captured. The major media, fully captured. And then bring it forward. So now you have, with the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, which is Anthony Fauci, the entire AIDS industry was captured by Burroughs Wellcome and a small group that they were giving huge amounts of money to, huge, obscene amounts. And as a result, they controlled all the narrative, and no matter what your background or degrees or your knowledge, they didn't want to hear. Now, I did a press conference, I did one press conference in the largest church on the west side, Center Park West. I did a press conference at the Apollo Theater. It was a press conference. That's why I had an hour and a half that I stood off stage, because Bill Tatum had arranged for all these medical doctors, all African American, to come with patients and talk about what they had seen when they changed their diet, a healthy lifestyle, intravenous vitamin C and ozone, etc. And then I got up and talked after that. And Bill told me 2 weeks later, you know, Gary, the media, the black African American media, they're covering this story. Tony Brown, Earl Caldwell, Bill McCreary, no one else is covering it. no one else. Well, and then I had a press conference down on Broadway at General Media, and we invited every AIDS organization. No one came because they'd been captured. Therefore, they controlled the narrative and they controlled the media. And I'll tell you how captured the media was. A woman reporter wanted to do a story. Fine. And I said, but don't talk with me about the story. Talk with the people who get my information. So I was lecturing that day at the Roosevelt Hotel. It was packed, thousands of people. And I interviewed, or I didn't interview, I turned to her and I said, here are medical doctors, nurses, people from all walks of life. Why don't you ask them how changing their life, changing their diet, changing their exercise and behavior has impacted them? And she said, well, no. I said, you're here. This is proof. But she went to talk with Stephen Barrett, the leading person who supplies Wikipedia with its skeptic information, none of which is legitimate. So she wouldn't interview thousands of people. So I got out there and I said, how many people have had terminal cancer? Hands went up. How many have reversed it using natural techniques? A lot of hands showed that they had reversed it. And AIDS, there were 11 people had reversed their AIDS. Hands went up. And I turned to him and I said, you've got people right here who've reversed AIDS. Is that newsworthy? We've got the blood work up. We've got the medical doctors. We've got everyone who worked on this. Will you run that story? But you'll certainly run a story about an experimental toxic drug that has proved nothing. No. So that reporter, that media, that reporter came from, all captured. So if you think today on any issue, on Russiagate, that didn't exist, and Wim Binney of the National Security Agency and Roy McGovern and all the other people who are the true whistleblowers, the true courageous front line of truth, said there was no Russia interference. And instead of that, they had to make it about Russia because they wanted the power to keep the White House, and as a result, to keep all their secrets secret and all their control complete. So now they're doing it with the coronavirus. So they're going to follow right up through the election, watch everything change after the election, because they won't tell you the truth about the coronavirus. They just lie about everything, and we've been exposing lies every single day. I've got a choice here right now because of the time, so I'm just merely giving this as examples of how over decades institutions are taking control over, including Pacifica, by the way. It's gone to hell since then. Just look at its numbers. What numbers? Well, you know. And unfortunately, they control all the social media platforms. As a result, except for a few, but all the big ones, Twitter and YouTube and Google, and as a result, if you say anything that represents a challenge to anything they're doing, any one of the players that they control are doing, any of the groups are doing, you're immediately destroyed. And if you doubt me, I can give you the names of hundreds of individuals that no longer are invited anywhere to speak except for small little groups. So that is what's important. There's two clips. And what I'm going to do is this. I'm going to hold off until tomorrow playing the Matt Taibbi clip because I need you to listen to ideally 30 minutes. Okay, so half my show tomorrow is that. And that will show you what I'm talking about because they're only now, and you'll hear him. You'll hear Matt say, you know, I was one of those people who didn't want to believe. And then I saw it when they came for Alex Jones. Now, I don't like Alex Jones. I don't like anything about Alex Jones. Do I want to see him banned? No, because they'll take the most extreme and ban them first, and then you forget that it doesn't stop there. Then they go to ones that are less extreme until they go to the moderate ones, and then they go to the progressive ones until one day the very voices and the very personalities and the very level of scholarship that you depend upon in any given area, what happened to them? Well, they were banned too. Why? Because they represented a voice. Remember, when you're seeking power, you're seeking absolute power, control, absolute control. And you will allow no hostages. You kill everything. You kill an idea. So therefore, everyone sees what you're doing, and they pull back. How many professors out there know the truth about Professor Brett Weinstein and his wife both being thrown out of their tenure positions, not for doing a single thing wrong? They did everything right. And the mob of young teenagers that were screaming and demeaning and violent, they didn't do a thing right. Yet the industry was, they've captured the universities, they've captured the administrators, and now they're putting in place their agendas. So the media's got an agenda. Big Pharma has an agenda. And look, I warned you all, I said that Greta Thunberg's message is honest, but everything about her is false. Her parents, all the people behind her, you don't get to go to Congress, you don't go meet the Finch president, you don't speak, to Barack Obama or any foreign president simply on because you're a nice person or you have an idea. No, that's all manipulated, yet the average person didn't want to believe it. We don't want to believe something that we can't perceive. So now Brett Weinstein, you'll hear him say, he said, I didn't believe this was possible, but I'm a victim of it. Now I believe it. So what does it take? Does it take the day when the new COVID-19 vaccine comes to your door, where you must be tested, you must be given the vaccine, or you're not given an identification card that allows you to get on a plane, a bus, a plane, a subway, or go into an elevator? Because it's coming. It's coming now. So we're going to hear these doctors, because these doctors are now being shamed, every one of them. They're being attacked, and one of them is being attacked. The African-American you're going to see, she's being racially attacked. And where are the voices who say we're anti-racist, and yet you're supporting racist attacks against her? That's the contradiction, too. And you'll hear Matt talking about that, and Brett. If you're on the inside of a group, nothing you do is considered offensive. You can break every rule. If you're on the outside and the target, oh, then you're the enemy, even though you're both doing the same thing. So these people finally had had enough. They didn't know each other. They're all strangers, but they all have something in common. They're regular board-certified physicians who know that a drug that could be helping people, hydroxychloroquine plus zinc plus an antibiotic, was curing, and they use the word curing their patients. Let's go to that and hear it now, because this is the last barrier, a handful of doctors standing between the truth and your body. And if you don't care about it, then the day that they come and knock on your door, remember my comment today. They're going to come and knock on your door. And if you haven't done anything, don't cry. You're going to get your karma, and you're not going to like it.
Thank you so much, Congressman. So we're here because we feel as though the American people have not heard from all the expertise that's out there all across our country. We do have some experts speaking, but there's lots and lots of experts across the country. So some of us decided to get together. We're America's frontline doctors. We're here only to help American patients and the American nation heal. We have a lot of information to share. Americans are riveted and captured by fear at the moment. We are not held down by the virus as much as we're being held down by the spider web of fear. That spider web is all around us, and it's constricting us, and it's draining the lifeblood of the American people, American society, and American economy. This does not make sense. COVID-19 is a virus that exists in essentially two phases. There's the early phase disease and there's the late phase disease. In the early phase, either before you get the virus or early when you've gotten the virus, if you've gotten the virus, there's treatment. That's what we're here to tell you. We're going to talk about that this afternoon. You can find it on America's Frontline Doctors. There's many other sites that are streaming it live on Facebook. But we implore you to hear this, because this message has been silenced. There are many thousands of physicians who have been silenced from telling the American people the good news about the situation, that we can manage the virus carefully and intelligently, but we cannot live with this spider web of fear that's constricting our country. So we're going to hear now from various physicians. Some are going to talk to you about what the lockdown has done to young, to older, to businesses, to the economy, and how we can get ourselves out of the cycle of fear.
Kids are being are tolerating it very well. They're not passing it on to their parents. They're not passing it on to their teachers. Dr. Mark Woolhouse from Scotland, who is a pediatric infectious disease specialist and epidemiologist, said the following. He said there has not been one documented case of COVID being transferred from a student to a teacher in the world. In the world. I think that is important that all of us who are here today realize that our kids are not really the ones who are driving the infection. It is being driven by older individuals. And yes, we can send the kids back to school, I think, without fear. And this is the big issue right now, as Congressman Norman alluded to. This is the really important thing we need to do. We need to normalize the lives of our children. How do we do that? We do that by getting them back in the classroom. And the good news is they're not driving this infection at all. Yes, we can use security measures. Yes, we can be careful. I'm all for that. We all are. But I think the important thing is we need to not act out of fear. We need to act out of science. We need to do it. We need to get it done. Finally, the barrier, and I hate to say this, but the barrier to getting our kids back in school is not going to be the science. It's going to be the national unions, the teachers union, the National Education Association, other groups who are going to demand money. And listen, I think that it's fine to give people money for PPE and different things in the classroom, but some of their demands are really ridiculous. They're talking about, where I'm from in California, the UTLA, which is the United Teachers of Los Angeles, is demanding that we defund the police. What does that have to do with education? They're demanding that they stop or they shut all private charter schools, privately funded charter schools. These are the schools that are actually getting the kids educated. So clearly, there are going to be barriers. The barriers will not be science. There will not be barriers for the sake of the children. It's going to be for the sake of the adults, the teachers, and everybody else, and for the union. So that's where we need to focus our efforts and fight back. So thank you all for being here, and let's get our kids back in school.
Hello, I'm Dr. Stella Emanuel. I'm a primary care physician in Houston, Texas. You know, I actually went to medical school in West Africa, Nigeria, where I took care of malaria patients, treated them with hydroxychloroquine and stuff like that. So I'm actually used to these medications. I'm here because I have personally treated over 350 patients with COVID. Patients that have diabetes, patients that have high blood pressure, patients that have asthma, old people. I think my oldest patient is 92, 87 year olds. And the result has been the same. I put them on hydroxychloroquine, I put them on zinc, I put them on Zitromax, and they are all well. For the past few months, I've taken care of over 350 patients. We've not lost one. Not a diabetic, not a somebody with high blood pressure, not somebody with asthma, not an old person. We've not lost one patient. And on top of that, I've put myself, my staff, and many doctors that I know on hydroxychloroquine for prevention, because by the very mechanism of action, it works early and as a prophylaxis. We see patients, 10 to 15 COVID patients every day. We give them breathing treatments. We only wear surgical masks. None of us has gotten sick. It works. So right now, I came here to Washington, D.C. to say, America, nobody needs to die. The study that made me start using hydroxychloroquine was a study that they did under the NIH in 2005 that say it works. Recently, I was doing some research about a patient that had hiccups, and I found that they even did a recent study in the NIH, which is our national institute, that is the national NIH, National Institute of Health. They actually had a study, and go look it up. Type hiccups and COVID, you will see it. They treated a patient that had hiccups with hydroxychloroquine, and it proved that COVID is a symptom of hiccups. It's a symptom of COVID. So if the NIH knows that treating the patient with hydroxychloroquine proves that hiccup is a symptom of COVID, then they definitely know that hydroxychloroquine works. I'm upset. Why I'm upset is that I see people that cannot breathe. I see parents walk in. I see diabetics sit in my office knowing that this is a death sentence and they can't breathe. And I hug them and I tell them, it's going to be okay. You're going to leave. And we treat them and they leave. None has died. So if some fake science, some person sponsored by all these fake pharma companies comes out and say, oh, we've done studies and they found out that it doesn't work, I can tell you categorically it's fake science. I want to know who is sponsoring that study. I want to know who is behind it. Because there is no way I can treat 350 patients and counting and nobody is dead and they all did better. And then you're going to tell me that you treated 20 people, 40 people and it didn't work. I'm a true testimony. So I came here to Washington, D.C., to tell America, nobody needs to get sick. This virus has a cure. It is called hydroxychloroquine, zinc, and Zithromax. I know you people want to talk about masks. Hello? You don't need masks. There is a cure. I know they don't want to open schools. No, you don't need people to be locked down. There is prevention, and there is a cure. And let me tell you something. All you fake doctors out there that tell me, oh, yeah, I want a double-blinded studies. I just tell you, quit sounding like a computer, double-blinded, double-blinded. Is your, I don't know whether your chips are malfunctioning, but I'm a real doctor. I have radiologists, we have plastic surgeons, we have neurosurgeons like Sanjay Gupta saying, oh, yeah, it doesn't work and it causes heart disease. Let me ask you, Dr. Sanjay Gupta, hear me. Have you ever seen a COVID patient? Have you ever treated anybody with hydroxychloroquine and they died from heart disease? When you do, come and talk to me. Because I sit down in my clinic every day and I see this patient walk in every day, scared to death. I see people driving 2-3 hours to my clinic because some ER doctor is scared of the Texas board or they are scared of something and they will not prescribe medication to these people. I tell all of you doctors that are sitting down and watching Americans die, you're like the good Nazi, the good what, the good Germans that watched Jews get killed and you did not speak up. If they come after me, they threaten me. They've threatened to, I mean, I've gotten all kinds of threats. Oh, they're going to report me to the boards. They're going to, I say, you know what? I don't care. I'm not going to let Americans die. And if this is the mountain, if this is the hill where I get nailed on, I will get nailed on it. I don't care. You can report me to the boards. You can kill me. You can do whatever. But I'm not going to let Americans die. And today I'm here to say it, that America, there is a cure for COVID. All this foolishness is not, does not need to happen. There is a cure for COVID. There is a cure for COVID. It's called hydroxychloroquine, it's called zinc, it's called Zithromax. And it is time for the grassroots to wake up and say, no, we're not going to take this any longer. We're not going to die. Because let me tell you something. When somebody is dead, they are dead. They're not coming back tomorrow to have an argument. They're not coming back tomorrow to discuss the double-blinded study and the data. All of you doctors that are waiting for data, if 6 months down the line, you actually found out that this data shows that this medication works, how about your patients that have died? You want a double-blinded study where people are dying? It's unethical. So, guys, we don't need to die. There is a cure.
You can watch the entire video by going to prn.fm. Good for her. And yet she's the one who's being attacked. And that's unfortunate. Thank goodness we have some physicians willing to stand up and have the courage to tell the truth, and they're not alone. All over the world, scientists and physicians are standing up. I read you yesterday a report from the number one journal in epidemiology in the world by the one of the top two epidemiologists in the United States with 300 published papers, MD, PhD, and he said the same thing. Said the same thing about the same drug. He found five individual studies, where hydroxychloroquine worked. So, and I think 700 patients, not a single death. And one patient died in one study out of hundreds. Now, compare that to how many died because they were being overly treated and with the wrong treatments and the respirators. And then look at all the ones that went back into the nursing homes with COVID and killed everyone in there. Are we going to hold Andrew Cuomo responsible for those preventable deaths? No, unfortunately not. Remember, they've captured the media, they've captured the body politic, principally. There are some good and honest legislators, but they don't have the power. They've captured almost everything in our world, and they've done it methodically and with intent. Something to think about. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.